opinions expressed on this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the management of Louisville.am and Veritas New Media, a Louisville.am production.
Into the 20, and Lamb's on the loose, and they won't catch him. No worry, nobody close. Corbin Lamb, touchdown Cardinals.
What time is it? Car time.
You are now listening to the Crunch Zone, broadcasting live from a speeding train. This is Crunch Revenge, also known as Mike Lindsay, and I'm sitting with
Mark Blankenbaker, also known as at UofL Sheriff 50.
And we are here to talk about the end of the ACC football season. Cards take down Boston College to finish 5-3. We're going to talk about peek ahead a little bit into Louisville's future and their past with football. We got basketball, we got program updates. It's the Crunch Zone coming at you right now. All right, Mark, 5-3 is our final first-year slate in the ACC, and you were up in Boston College.
I was, forever and ever. You started out in the ACC with a winning record. And, you know, it was a good – I think it was a good year. You know, I would have loved to have stolen another one or two.
Right.
But you know what?
I'm sure Devontae Parker wishes that also would have been the case.
Everybody. I mean, I think everybody. But, you know, you kind of blew two of those games, or actually all three, and – you still have a great chance at a great season. So Boston was really nice. The Eagles, it's a good program up there. Kind of reminded me a lot of Cincinnati. Older, more stone than Cincinnati. But this sort of campus vibe was very similar. And I really enjoyed that trip. It was cold, but the Cards got a win, so it was a good one.
Okay, so and reflecting on that, if you know, who knows where the Cards will finish out. We're certainly hoping they finish 9-3. But, you know, in your first year of the ACC, when you switch conference, you play new opponents, you've got a new coach, you got new players, you know, do we compete? You know, and it's like, you know where we've been, but there's a new element to it. And I think the Cardinals have proved they're in great shape.
Yep.
And they not only competed, but are mad that they should have won the other three.
Yep. I mean, they should have won the other three. I mean, you know, just to recap, you know, I know we've done this a lot, and we're going to probably do this all year because it's one of those things where it's like
frustrating.
The one that got away. It's frustrating because, you know, you drop a punt against West Virginia, you're going to get the ball back to seal the game. You have Clemson, you're inside their 5-yard line.
Yep.
And give up that. You have a lead late in the game, and then you give that up, and then you have a chance to win on the final play. You lose.
And you also waste a play.
You waste a play. Okay.
Chucking that ball in the dirt instead of just throwing a fade route for 1 second left on the clock. It can be 0.5 seconds left on the clock.
Who knows? Who cares?
Pitch it, incomplete, stop clock, next play.
And, you know, and that's a tough place to win in Clemson. So you had a chance to win there. You didn't win. Okay. And then you blew a 21-point lead to the number two team in the nation on your home field. And that's deflating enough. But I think that's one of the things about this Boston College weekend that was so huge for this program, because you just blew that. You just blew a heart-wrenching game that Bobby Petrino talked about how much they invested into this game.
Right.
And then they're down 13-3. And 3 out of 4 possessions start and end inside the 5-yard line.
Right.
And you're able to, you know, get only 3 points out of that. Instead of having 9 or 21, you have 3.
Right.
And it wasn't looking good. You're blowing you're getting blown up on fourth down, on your fourth down attempts, or, you know, all kinds of stuff's going wrong.
Right.
And all of a sudden, Louisville found a way to say, screw this. It doesn't matter if we're on the road or if we've blown these other games. This is what we can do today, and this is how we're going to affect today. And they went out and won the game.
And certainly we got a little bit of help from Adazio deciding to go for it at the end of the second half, press it a little bit, and that sure as hell didn't work out. And then they got reintroduced to Mr. Parker.
They did. They got reintroduced to Mr. Parker. That touchdown right before halftime was a big deal. But really, just overall, this defense finding a way to assert its will against Boston College and shut down what they do. Boston College's first two possessions, Louisville was struggling, you know, and that's one of the things that I was really pleased with, because, you know, previously in Florida State, the wheels were falling off. Louisville couldn't make adjustments to fix it. against Boston College. This is a totally different style that they scheme for all year.
Not only totally different, but top 10 rated in the nation with rushing yards per game.
Exactly.
Put 500 rushing yards on USC.
Yeah, 500 rushing yards against USC. Ended up with only 166 against Louisville, but that's their offense. So it's like, okay, you know they're going to run the football.
Right.
How much are they really going to get? And they did get those yards first.
About 100 yards under their average.
It is. I don't remember what it was going in, but it was.
I think it was about 270.
Somewhere there. Maybe it was 270. But what I'm getting at is like the first two possessions, they were giving up yards. They were, you know, they were chunking them away on the run game, and then they were hitting those big passes. And they hit a couple of those big passes, but Louisville found a way to scheme and adjust in the middle of the ball game to really shut that down. And that was a big thing that they didn't do against Florida State defensively or offensively, frankly, and they ultimately lost. And this was a road game, road environment. The fans are right behind the bench.
Yeah.
And pretty unoriginal trash talkers in Boston. I was really disappointed by that. But they definitely...
They were cold. They were bummed out from the Florida State loss.
Really didn't matter what you were saying to them because they're literally in your lap. So they could have just been saying gibberish.
Yeah.
It would have affected you because you're hearing them over your coaches and all that other stuff. So
is that close?
Yeah. Like if you... to kind of describe how close it is, the photographers have about a yardstick of width to travel between the bench and the wall that protects the stands.
Yeah.
So you have about a yardstick wide, maybe less, because there's equipment and coolers that you kind of have to navigate through. And, yeah, the fans are giving it to you as somebody that's walking behind.
And for Louisville's, it's like – you know, folks, it's like about 4 or 5 yards.
Well, it's long. It's probably longer than
that. They may be giving up some seats there.
It may be 7-8 yards. You know, it may be almost the first down in between, and you may be giving up some seats. But I think the reason why they did that is so that they could host soccer inside Papa John's Cardinal Stadium, and they cannot at Boston College at all. So, not to get into a facility thing, but
we now have soccer, so let's build those seats back.
Yeah,
we got the best soccer facility in America. Okay, well, Louisville. You know, I think from a fan's perspective, everyone watching, I think, you know, the first quarter pretty much had everyone throwing up. And then second quarter, moderately happy. The Devontae Parker touchdown, though, is what jazzed everybody up, I think, from the players to the fans to the nation when it comes to what a play that was by Devontae.
Yeah, you know, Devontae just being on the field these past four games has really injected a huge surge of energy into the offense. And he's already in four games Louisville's leading receiver in terms of yardage. He just has the one touchdown. I think everybody knows that if he was 100%, he'd have 4 or 5 already. But that's going to be coming these next three games because he's looked good every single game. But he even told us after the Boston College game, he said it's better. You know, it gets better every week. He's like, I can't make it worse.
Yeah.
And
he's got 2 weeks to get even better.
He's got 2 weeks to get any better to go into a really cold environment. It looks like it might be in
30.
Yeah. I mean, we're lucky we're not doing it early in the week because the Monday, Tuesday of the Notre Dame week, it looks like it might be like 25 and 13.
Oh, wow.
As the lows. But it is a 3:30 game, so you start the game in the heat of the day.
Well, one little fun fact for Devontae, not only is he leading Louisville in receiving, but he's leading America in receiving since he is returned. So no wide receiver in America has more receiving yards than Devontae Parker since he returned on October 18th.
Pretty great.
But nothing. Not that surprises us. You know, that's something that we wanted to see against Clemson and against Virginia and against everyone we played. But we got him now, and it's a great time to have him. We got a big game coming up. So, you know, there's the tweet by Dominique Brown saying, you know, they don't even tell me why I'm not playing. It's crazy. But to be honest, I think, you know, you go with the hot hand, and Brandon Radcliffe and Michael Dyer look great right now.
Yeah, you know,
I love Dominique Brown. Trust me. I'm a huge fan. He blocks. He was our best wide receiver at Clemson. You know, what do you think about all that?
You know, I think you know, look at Dominic Brown. You know, he started out with a great Miami game, and then it kind of got stale, to be honest. A lot of upright running. We talked about getting low a lot, and Brandon Radcliffe and Michael Dyer have been running very effectively. And we don't go to practice. We're not allowed to in practice now that they've closed it after this, you know, first 2 weeks of fall camp. Now, we can't see anything ever. Mm-hmm. So we don't know what goes on there. And I think maybe his tweet is a symptom of maybe his overall problem when it comes to attitude. Because, yeah, he's been quiet up to that point on his playing time issues. But at the same time, like, if you're making that a public thing rather than going into your coach's office saying, hey, why are you not, as a captain, as a senior, fifth-year player,
address it directly.
Going in and saying, hey, coach, what do I have to do to get the ball?
Yeah.
I know these guys are playing really well in front of me, but I feel like I can help this team.
Yeah.
Go in, find out why. They don't even – his tweet in context was, they don't even tell me why I'm not playing. Well, go find out and find out why you're not playing. Those coaches are accessible in their offices all the time. I'm pretty sure Dominic Brown has Colby Smith, Chris Klonakis, and Bobby Petrino's phone number.
Right.
So he can call and not make it a public issue.
Yeah.
And so sometimes
we don't know.
No. You know, but sometimes these sometimes what you see publicly as a symptom is the root of the problem. And maybe there's, you know, even though he's a fifth year guy, you know, some of the maturity issues may be kind of coming to the head. And, you know, that's part of the growing process. Dominic Brown's given a lot to the program, but he needs to figure that out as a man on his own instead of making it a public issue.
Yeah, a lot of big fourth down gains, a lot of big plays by Dominic Brown. He's kind of a lot more. And I'm sure they're going to use him coming up.
I guarantee it
benefits everyone to keep everyone fresh. Now, Boston College being a top 10 rushing defense, both teams being top 10 rushing defenses. Sorry, top 10 rushing offense is Boston College. Both teams top 10 rushing defense. And Louisville scores themselves 166 above average rushing offense, which matches Boston College. Damned if our defense didn't show it again.
Yeah, the defense did great. Louisville's running game did great. I mean, overall, you know, of course, some of that was Reggie Bonifant. I mean, you know, Reggie getting 76 yards on the ground is a big, big deal. He actually outrushed Tyler Murphy.
Yeah.
Who's the rushing quarterback in the ball game? You know,
with 1,000 yards,
with
already.
1,000 yard rushing. Right. You know, Reggie goes out there and outperforms him on the ground. He did have the big gainer. That was a big deal. But I just think that, you know, when you go back and look at that game, they didn't throw a pass after the first possession in the third quarter, and I think that kind of tells you how much confidence they have in this defense to say, okay, we got the lead, we're up 24-13.
Yep.
Hey. Come get the lead. When I know our starting quarterback's hurt, we're playing a rookie. Well, we're just going to run it on you.
Yeah.
And they have a running defense. So it worked. And they extended their lead and won by a pretty, pretty healthy margin, won by 19.
And Rankins and D'Angelo Brown just showing us every time how much we're going to miss them with great play. There was one where literally it was Rankins in the middle. And then they had like two defensive ends on the far ends. It almost looked like a 5-on-1. And Rankins found his way right through that line. He went around one of the interior linemen, went right around him, straight at the quarterback. I'm just like, what the hell's going on? They got four guys that can't stop him.
Yeah, I mean, those three guys, DuBose, Rankins, and Sheldon, and D'Angelo Brown, they're amazing. And they make the defense go. And they're really underappreciated because they just don't have the you know, the stats or the recognition. But in this game, you know, you have B.J. DuBose with 8 tackles. You have D'Angelo Brown with 7 tackles.
Man.
You know, and then you have Sheldon Rankins with 6 tackles. That is an enormous amount of tackles.
And just think about this, folks. Usually your linebackers or your safeties coming up, that's where you see a lot of tackles.
Yeah.
This is a top 10 rushing offense, and 3 of your 4 top tacklers, they never got past the line.
And, you know, D'Angelo Brown with 7 tackles, that's a huge, huge, huge number for a nose guard. That's like, you know, your nose guard, if he gets 2 or 3 tackles in a game, you're like, okay, that was good.
That's right.
Because he's really there to occupy blockers. He's not a stat position.
Yeah.
You get 7 tackles in a single game, that's ridiculous.
It's
absolutely ridiculous. And that's a big credit to him.
Really impressive. We got 2 sacks in the game. You know, that was you know, the one I was talking about with Rankins was one of them.
Yeah, Rankins. Rankins got 1.5 sacks, and D'Angelo Brown was in on the other half.
Seven tackles for loss, and then of course 4 interceptions, 3 by
Jerod Holloman.
Jerod Holloman.
I was just so surprised that anybody other than Jerod Holloman was allowed to intercept the ball on this team, you know.
But wouldn't you know it,
Sheldon Rankins with the second of the year, the big guy. I mean, you know, and in fact, Sheldon Rankins' 2 interceptions of the season is 2 more than Terrell Floyd has in the year, and Terrell's had a great year at corner.
Right.
So you can't measure all your production at cornerback because Terrell Floyd is playing at a level that scouts have to love right now.
Right.
If you notice...
Yeah, just because you're not ball hawking doesn't mean you're stopping the play from happening.
If you notice, when teams are running like screens and, you know, like runs to the outside, they're not running them to Terrell Floyd's side. They're always running them to Charles Gaines' side because Terrell Floyd is a crazy great tackler.
Right.
He's going to shut down your screen. He's going to shut down your sweep, all your outside plays. And they'll rather take their chances with Charles Gaines.
Gaines is the dive-at-your-waist tackler. He just tries to trip people. He doesn't want to go body-to-body on a tackle.
He's Deion. You know, he thinks he is. Anyway, he's not really interested in tackling. And that's to his detriment because he's a first-round coverage guy, and he's probably a not draftable tackler.
Yeah.
You know, so we'll see where NFL really values him. But one of my favorite moments of the Boston College game was the last play of Boston College's game offensively. They had an incompletion, and Louisville got the ball back on downs, and the play was kind of over to the sideline, and Charles Gaines came over to me, and he goes, "You ever take candy from a baby? This is like taking candy from a baby." And that's Charles Gaines for you. I wish like crazy I had the video camera up but I didn't. So, but I've heard him say that. He said that also in the first half of the Clemson game.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll get
him. The baby came back for its candy.
Yeah, the baby came back for its candy. Yeah. The baby grew up. So. But yeah, it was a fun environment. Boston College was a neat place. The people were very nice. The stadium is very accessible. The neighborhood's great to walk around in. The tailgating was better than I expected. They had an announced crowd of 33,000 people. Everybody kind of mocked that a little bit because they said it was lower. It was a cold night in Boston.
Right.
And the night before, Boston College played Boston University in a huge ice hockey game.
And that's the sport.
And, well, I think football still is number one, but I think Boston College is just such a small community.
Yeah, but you got the Boston
community.
Bruins up there, so you probably have these ice hockey lifers up there.
It's a pro town.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if the Celtics are playing, if the Red Sox are playing, if the Patriots are playing the next day, which I don't know what the schedule's like, but
32,000 is probably a pretty respectable crowd for a pro town.
I think it is. And,
you know, because they got plenty of options to spend their money on that aren't amateur options.
Had it been warmer, you know, I think more people would have been there. I don't think that the Boston College fan base is that much different than the Louisville fan base, except for the Louisville fan base doesn't have to compete with pro sports. I think that's kind of the thing that we're going with here. But it was good. I liked it. I had fun.
And is there anything really unique about the town? A food, an item, a drink, a ritual or tradition? They do the fans? Do they all take off their pants in the fourth quarter? Like, do they do anything?
Well, I know they did something in the middle of the third and fourth quarter because I could hear it.
Yeah,
but I was in a staircase.
Wow. Yeah, what were they doing?
I can't remember. I was in a staircase going down to the field from the press box.
The third quarter something tradition.
And, yeah, I don't know what it was, but I stayed in New York City. With my dad, so I didn't really hang out in Boston at all. I wanted to, because I got invited to an alumni event at Cityside Bar, but I was traffic and driving from New York City to Boston on a Saturday wasn't all that fast.
How far is that, by the way?
It was 3 hours after the game. It was 5 hours before the game.
Okay, yeah.
So it was when I'm looking on GPS, I'm like, oh, 3 hours, I can do this, and it didn't work out. So, but that's fine.
Add those up. That's your average in Notre Dame.
Yes.
I'm hearing about 4 is what.
You're hearing about 4?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't know if I'm going to stay up the night before or stay the night of. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But we'll get to Boston College next – or Notre Dame next week. But Boston College was a lot of fun. One of the cool things about this game was Devontae Parker passed Mario Urrutia and Miguel Montano in this game in career reception yards. And Mario Urrutia was sitting right behind the Louisville bench.
I saw him up there. I saw him in the – they showed him on TV.
Yeah. And so when he I think he was charting where Devontae was.
What did they did UofL fly him up and say?
I don't know. I didn't.
I thought it was kind of crazy
to talk to him.
Yeah,
but he was excited when Devontae broke his record. He was aware of it.
Yeah,
and so I think that may be why he went on the trip to see somebody pass it. But really cool little moment. For
Mario's
me.
A really underrated wide receiver for Louisville because I mean his stats are pretty crazy and
great stats.
You know, a lot of people think of him for the Miami stiff arm and, you know, a couple of good plays, but they don't. I don't think they think of Mario as they should. Like, I think they should be thinking Mario even higher. It's like, I think, I don't know. I don't know what
it
is.
You know, like, I think people remember some of those drops in the Gator Bowl.
Yeah.
They absolutely remember the stiff arms.
Oh, yeah.
I think everybody kind of remembers Mario for the guy, that the idea of him.
Yeah.
And so, like, this guy is awesome. And I remember when he came in, he had no idea how to run a route.
Yeah.
You know, at all from Fern Creek. That's where he's from, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he came in. I remember his first practice ever. And Paul Petrino was teaching him how to run his steps out of his break. And he was terrible.
Yeah.
And so to see him develop and be in the top 10 was a huge feat. You get a guy like Devontae Parker, when he came into Louisville, he was ready to play right away.
They were doing the throw it up to Devontae in the corner of the end zone at Ballard. I mean, I totally remember seeing that play in person, but always hearing about it.
And you know, Mario has great stats, and they're very comparable. But when it comes down to NFL readiness, and Devontae Parker is who everybody wanted Mario Yuridio to be.
Yeah.
And, you know,
Mario wasn't as fast. You know,
wasn't as fast.
Parker's like a 4.35 timed at full speed.
And it's really
he's quick.
You think about the flexibility of Devontae Parker that somebody never really talked, that nobody ever talks about it.
Yeah.
He's so flexible and has such a long reach to be able to bend as necessary and change directions.
Chase the ball wherever it is.
It's a big deal. And he also never drops the ball. Yeah. And, you know, that's a huge deal for Devontae.
And you know what sucks is we know what life without Devontae Parker is because we had to watch it for the first half of the season.
We did.
And we like life better with Devontae Parker
Absolutely.
In it. So so that's going to be kind of a bummer next year, but we've got some young talent, and hopefully whatever the hell is going on with James Quick is figured out, and he improves, you know, because he'll be a junior. You can't expect a lot out of freshmen and sophomores. He's had a respectable year. You know, he just hasn't been very good on the special teams side. But otherwise, he was top five, I think, in receiving yards in the ACC before, you know, Devontae came back.
Well, you know, it's like this with James. Like, you know, I don't know how much we want to speculate or allow rumor to kind of get into the podcast. But, you know, if whatever you did to violate team rules to get suspended is such a selfish, boneheaded thing that you could possibly do because of what happened over the summer. And if you are going to get a break like that, not miss any time, embarrass the program, and then come in here and in November do something to get suspended for before the last three games of the year, well, if you're embarrassed, good. You should be. Because you're supposed to be a functioning member of this program, of the school, and of the football team.
Done for the year? Or is it indefinite?
I thought it was indefinite, so it could be. But I'm okay with whatever punishment that they feel is necessary. One game. If he misses three games, fine. But for me, like James, this is a learning lesson. This is something where he's embarrassed. Now his parents know. You know what I'm saying? Okay, Mom, Dad, why'd you get suspended? Well, But whatever I did. Why'd you do that?
Two elite level athlete parents are like, dude.
Why would you screw this up?
Why are you doing this?
Why would you do that? You're a U.S. Army All-American, one of the highest rated recruits in the country, and you're being a jerk to your team.
Knucklehead.
You're being a jerk. I mean, because really, if you do something to get suspended, you're not doing it to yourself. You're not. You're doing it to your teammates.
Yeah.
You're doing it to the fans.
Yeah.
Because you have the ability. Nobody else had it. God gave it to you, and you're going to screw it up like that. Yeah. I feel the same way about a lot of athletes that have come around the program. And I'm not going to rehash them, but like, that's how I feel. It's like if
Derek Character.
Yeah, well, yeah, you could
Brandon
Bender. But like, just think of like walk-ons, right? Yeah. These walk-ons, they play for free.
All right.
You know, they don't get a scholarship. They show up every day. They go through all this stuff. And if they had the skill that you have in your body and theirs, well, then, you know, their attitude would would shit all over your attitude.
Yeah.
I mean, it really would. Like, you would have nothing on them.
Right.
Because they're going to have a great attitude, and they're going to do more with your ability than you ever thought about doing with your ability. Until you have a good attitude and you do the right things, then you're not going to go anywhere. I've seen too many players, you know, have decent college careers with so much talent and then never do anything in the NFL or barely go into the pros and flame out and be like, well, why didn't I commit more when I had the chance to?
And this is the time to do something.
This is it.
Because, well, I mean, as far as a punishment, this is the time to try to get that fixed, because they're like, we don't need you. We got Devontae.
Yeah.
Eli Rogers. We got plenty of wide receivers. That, you know, like, if they want to take the gamble to try to do an attitude adjustment on them, this is the power play. This is we don't need you. See you on the bench.
Yeah.
We don't need you the rest of the year. We don't know what the length of time is.
Look like we beat Boston College by 19 without
you. So 3-point spread.
Whatever.
And
on the road.
Yeah, and against
the top third.
Very good defense.
And we were down 10 at the time, by the way.
Right.
I just think, and also in terms of development for your own individual game, if you want to be a professional athlete, which if you're playing at a college football, you know, that's mostly everybody. Maybe he doesn't want it. Maybe that's what the problem is.
Yeah.
But the thing is like when you're a freshman and sophomore, you make the most improvement at that point in your career. Everything after that, after those 2 years, is experience based.
Yeah.
You know, if you're practicing and everything like that, like you're going to make improvements and get stronger.
Yeah.
But everything after that is experience.
Boys to men thing, high school to college. And then at that point, then it's become a little bit smarter or something like that. Yeah, I don't get it. Let's move to an injury. So we know, what do we know about Will Gardner?
I don't know if we know anything. I know that he could have played if they really needed him to, and obviously they didn't need him to. But we'll find out on Wednesday during the ACC teleconference if there is an update at all on James or Will, and find out what their availability is and during the bye week, and see, you know, what his timetable is, if it's just swollen or if it's serious. Maybe we'll know that at that point. So we'll look for that. I just, based on how he was walking after the game, and I kind of walked next to him during postgame handshakes while I was filming, and I was kind of watching him. He looked fine. He came out full pads at halftime, threw around, had his helmet. Looked like I thought he was going to go play, and then they went with Reggie.
So do you think
I thought he'd be okay.
Do you think Reggie was doing pretty good, and they use that as an excuse to keep Reggie in?
I don't think – no. Well, I think that's one of the reasons
Reggie's playing a little better. Let's just tell Will we don't want him to
get hurt. I think Reggie's play is reason enough to keep Will on the shelf and not risk it.
Right.
You know, I think
– Will, I think he looked great against Florida State, you know.
Yeah. So, well, Will is that, you know, they had 3 out of 4 possessions inside the 3-yard line, so he was doing a good job to get him there.
Right.
Not a great job of getting him in, but, you know, that's a whole other issue. He's moving the ball against a pretty good defense.
And we weren't thrilled with Reggie throwing the ball at the pylon.
No.
I mean, look. I was like, oh, my God, we just got UCF'd again.
And Oregon State, if you remember, because Ryan Hubble did it against Central Florida, you're right. Yeah. But then Adam Frohman in year one of Charlie Strong, they went to Corvallis and played Oregon State, and Adam Frohman fumbled the ball out of bounds. It would have been 14-0. Instead, it was 7-0 with Oregon State ball. They ended up winning the game.
Yeah, Joaquin Rogers of Oregon State still in the pros.
Yeah.
Lightning fast.
Is that how you say it? I always called him Jaquizz because it was way cooler.
Yeah, well, you couldn't keep up with him either way.
So. No, he was really good. And he is. Is he still in the NFL?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I don't know where he is, but I don't think he's with the Falcons anymore. But that was a really good game, and that really cost us. But I think the officials got it wrong. To be honest with you, I'd have called that a fumble. He did toss it.
Here's the deal.
But he didn't toss it to anybody.
I know, but here's the deal.
I don't understand it.
I don't know if you can call it a fumble if you throw it. We totally got lucky. We didn't deserve the ball back.
If you're reaching the ball out and it makes it look like it was you're throwing it, but really it just fell out of your hand as you're extending it.
Yeah, you could see him kind of falling through with his fingers and kind of rolling it right out. I mean, you saw the whole thing.
Well, what's the point of that?
The only thing I could think of is he was hoping to throw it as a fumble end zone out of bounds touchdown, but in this case, it hit the pylon.
Oh, and he fumbled it before he was out.
Yeah, so I think he was trying to do a fumble touchdown.
Hang on to the Super Bowl.
Everyone was just like, do not be 20-yard line to Boston College.
It drove me crazy, and you know, things were going really wrong at that point, but I man, like that was just kind of like the icing on the cake. And
how
I couldn't
funny
believe
was that Instagram picture?
The Instagram
where his coach chimed in.
It's a great sports photo, and Reggie Bonner put it on his Instagram, and you caught it.
Yeah, it's like, Reggie, I don't know if you should be bragging about that. But
and he's like,
it is a cool photo.
And then Garrett McGee goes, don't ever do that again, knucklehead.
So, yeah, on Instagram, funny. His coach. It's on the website, thecrunchzone.com, if you want to check out a very funny Instagram photo. Reggie posts it, and his quarterback coach calls him out.
Yeah. Well, the bad thing about that is that, you know, they did lose 5 yards on the play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he had held onto the ball, it would have been third and one at the 1 yard line, and Louisville ends up not scoring. They went for it on third down and fourth down, and didn't convert. So it was a wasted possession. And when you look at Louisville and you think that they had three possessions that they didn't score on, and they still won by 19, what could it have been?
Was that where we damn near looked like we got a safety and then we didn't get it?
Okay, that was the following possession. Okay, but what I don't understand, I was in the press box for that, and you know, I'm not watching television, and you're probably the fifth person today to ask me if it was a safety or not. And when I was watching that game, it never even occurred to me that it was close in person.
Yeah.
But I was a long way away, and
yeah,
I think everybody
sure at an angle.
Yeah, I was at a far angle. Yeah. I was at the long angle because I was more at the 30 on the other end at the press box. So it didn't occur to me, and the guys came in with their hands, obviously at the like half yard line or one. I could see that. But yeah, no, it must have been close on television. I'll need to watch it.
To me,
I haven't been home yet at all.
Yeah,
so.
To me, you know, and I could be totally wrong just because I was drinking bourbons, but I was watching the game, and it looked like his feet actually never left the paint of the end zone. So I'm like, he was leaning, yeah, but I mean, he was leaning against people. You know, like, I don't know how far that ball actually crossed.
It's 100% about the ball.
Sure. But I mean, I just didn't think there was any room for him to actually lean very far forward.
Sure. And maybe it was a safety. Maybe they botched the call. I know for a fact, I feel strongly, as strongly as I feel that Reggie should have had a fumble out of bounds for a touchback, I feel almost as strong that Louisville should have gotten the ball on that kick catch interference that was, I feel, wrongly called. Where Louisville should have gotten the ball inside the red zone. But what about Stacey Thomas blocking that punt?
Dude, that guy like destroyed that kicker's shins.
I mean, he was there way early.
Yeah.
I mean, it was amazing.
It had to be offsides.
And one of the things
it had to be offside.
One of the things I catch myself doing on special teams play is finding Stacey Thomas, number 32. And I did the same thing with Sonoris Perry, too. It's kind of wild because they were both 32. Hmm. And I would just watch them. And that's because if you watch Stacey Thomas, you're probably watching where the play is going to end up because he's so instinctive and he knows exactly where to be. And he's made a lot of really, really great plays on special teams.
Stacey Thomas, where's he from? What's he?
Oh, okay. So I'm trying to remember where he's from, but he moved from outside linebacker behind Malden to inside linebacker behind Kelsey, and he was, you know, they were raving about him in fall camp. He broke a bone in his hand or wrist and had a cast on it, played through it, and he's going to factor, I mean, big time in this defense. I mean, he's factoring already on special teams.
Mm-hmm.
He's a freshman, redshirt freshman, and he was also a late signee. I think he's a Miami guy, but I don't quote me on that because I'm pretty sure he's
I won't quote you, but I will record you and make it a podcast.
Yeah, no, I'm just letting everybody I know.
I will make it forever.
I'm pretty sure it's right, but it could be wrong. I've been wrong before.
Yeah.
So, but no, he's really been impressive to me. This year.
That second half felt so good. It had to feel good for the coaches, the players. It felt great for the fans.
It had an awesome feel. In fact, you know, I'm always in conversation with the ball boys and the photographers for the UofL football team and the program, and there was so much joy and happiness in the second half of the fourth quarter that when Boston College, we thought they fumbled their kickoff return. When they fumbled their kickoff return, they ended up overturning it. That they were like, what's going on? I didn't even see the play. And they were just like so like in the moment of happiness that they weren't really even paying attention to like what was going on in the field.
Yeah.
They were, you know, chatting with a lot of the players were chatting with the with the fans behind the stands.
Yeah.
And they were just really enjoying the win.
It was impressive.
You know, I feel like that's important to do. You know, there's something to be said about staying in the moment and winning the game. But when they knew that it dominated Boston College,
yeah,
and now Boston College is throwing the ball, the game was over.
And that's what we were hoping for. We knew he had 8 touchdowns, 6 interceptions coming into the game. We were hoping we could get him in a throwing situation. Gerard Holloman made him pay.
But, 3 times.
Yeah. But I'm so glad we got that. It's a great battle. This is what the difference between the ACC and like your American is you go into these middle rung games where you got 2 6-3 teams, and the other 6-3 team actually probably has a better win resume than you do, mm-hmm, you know, by beating a ranked USC at the time. You know, they're kind of, USC's still ranked ahead of Louisville. I think they're like 26.
They are.
So, you know, and you come out with 38 points. I mean, it's probably your second highest point total. Is that? Yeah, I know Murray was up there.
I mean, yeah, maybe
he
outside
had 31 of Florida State, 31 Miami. You
I
know,
have to go back and look, man.
It hasn't been a productive year all that much, you know, like what we expected at least. So it was a great feel-good win and a lot to look forward to. Hopefully we'll get Pio Vatave back from injury. Lorenzo Malden, I think, will be a taller order with a hamstring, but we'll hope that he gets better soon. And we'll find out about Will Gardner and then whatever the hell's going on with Quick. So. Yeah.
Well, especially with Malden's hamstring being a cold weather game up in Notre Dame,
right?
What does that look like? I mean, yeah, you know,
I don't think
you got to warm him up.
I'm betting he doesn't play.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll know.
He'll want to play.
We'll know more next week.
He'll be on Twitter. He's like, I am playing this damn game. He'll be on Instagram saying, Mr. Sack, your quarterback is playing this game. But if the coaches understand, and they do, the hamstring injury, yeah, I just don't think he plays because you don't want to hurt him for the draft. You don't want to hurt him for a bowl game. You might get him for the bowl game. You know, you don't
want him for a bowl.
Senior day. You'd rather him play senior day than, you know.
I don't know. I mean, if he ran across the field at Boston College, looked fine. I even said something to him.
Yeah,
because he forgot his gloves in the locker room. So right before the game, he ran across the field from the far sideline. And I said, hey, you look good to me. And he turned around and smiled. And he's a good guy. But one thing, you said something about the offense not having a good year, and while I do think that they're not meeting expectations in terms of
they're
not as efficient, but they're on pace to have the 8th highest average in points in school history, and I don't think a lot of people realize that.
Does that count Murray State?
It does.
Okay.
Yeah, and so, you know, for me, I'm always like, okay, well, yeah, you know, they don't have a whole bunch of yards, and they don't, but they are on pace for, like, you know, a top 10 point total.
It is, but it's all the points we didn't get. It's the stalling out. It's the how many
timely
goal. I mean, how many red zone? I mean, what's our percentage in the red zone?
Oh, well, after this game, it's really low.
Right. I mean it's like it probably our worst in years.
Yeah.
And so we're getting big plays. We can't get them when we want them. Like we'll get a 12, we'll get an 18, we'll get a 25, we'll get a 40-yard touchdown. But we, you know, I made the joke on Twitter just saying, can we just forego touchdowns and just automatically, if we can just automatically have 4 points if we get to the 3-yard line?
Yeah. Can we just do that?
Just forget touchdowns because we can get to the 3-yard line like nobody's business. We can get right to that 3-yard line. I would take 4 points for that every single time, and we would win all these football games.
Well, you know, right before the Brian Radcliffe fumble, when he fumbled up from the, I think it was the 2, I actually tweeted right before that play. I said,
Brandon Radcliffe is going to fumble this ball.
I said no. I said, I'd feel better about Louisville if they're at the 7-yard line or further away than I do at the 2.
It's been weird.
And then as soon as I hit send, the play happened and he fumbled the ball, and I was like, people are going to hate me because I just said that. But like,
It's your fault.
But I don't see that just in Louisville. I see that a lot of times when teams are playing good defenses and they get closer to the goal line, have more trouble scoring closer to the end zone because there's less space. And sometimes the false start that you get inside your 1 or 2 yard line is the best thing that could have happened because you got more room to work with.
Right.
Especially on third down when you might need to pass.
Right.
So, you know, in that way, I'm a big fan of sometimes taking a false start or delay. But if you're a power football team like Bobby Petrino wants to be,
right,
you got to be able to push the guy in front of you out
Michael Bush, no matter who was trying to tackle him, could always fall down for 3 yards.
Yeah, and see, that's not happening. Mm-hmm. Louisville, at this point, hasn't found its push at the point of attack yet.
And of course, you always hope that would be Dominic Brown at 240 pounds, but he runs so upright that it I think it just gets in the way of him leveraging the power that he has. He has so much more power. If he just gets really, really low versus, you know, he does if you just – and I'm not – I don't know crap about football. I didn't coach it, and I played it in, like, third and fourth grade, and I don't have a friend like you do, Amobi Okoye, Ramsey, all these guys that played football for Louisville. But I can tell you just from doing highlights that when I would clip Dominic Brown running highlights, it looked like he was running straight up and down like a board.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone, you know, and I just know from sports, you know, the leverage that you have in that position versus a little bit lower. Just because tennis, you got to keep low, and that's where I played. That's where I made my money was tennis. So I wish we could use that 240-pound body on that goal line a little bit more than we've been able to.
Yeah, you know, in football, low man wins. And, you know, Dominic Brown, we talked about it all offseason. He's 6'2", and he's got to get low and explode and really make people pay for trying to line up and tackle him. And you're right. He gives defenders a huge target to tackle, and he needs to get down, punch, and accelerate. He's probably not doing that in practice. That's probably why he's not playing.
All right, folks. Well, that does it for Louisville football and Boston College. We got, of course, Notre Dame to look forward to. But right now, let's check in on some basketball.
Topic of the week.
Well, you know, we can talk about how good they play, but I guess we'll just spend 1 minute talking about Patrick McSweeney.
Yeah, good moment.
I've never seen a moment like that for sports around Louisville program my whole life.
I wish I could have been there live. I was still in New York after the Boston College game. But I was watching on Twitter. I saw all the replays and everything. It was awesome. And
it was really cool.
And he had surgery the next day, Monday, to do a test on his bone. I don't exactly know how leukemia works. I'm not a doctor. So I'm not going to pretend like I know the details of it, but the day after doing that at the Yum Center, he's up there again fighting for his life against leukemia in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And Rick Pitino flew him up there, and you know, that's really great on him. But it was a great moment altogether, just for him, for Patrick, to be able to launch a three, even though it missed, you know, to steal the ball from Terry and to go and, you know, get your putback layup. I mean, that was, that's huge for him.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. And just, you know, and he's on Twitter, folks, and hearing, this is from 4 days ago. This is his tweet. When you find out from Coach Davenport personally that you're going to play in the UofL-Bellarmine game at the Yum Center, hashtag sweet. You know, I mean, that's how, this is like, every kid's dream in the world would be, you know, especially at that age. As you get older, you're like, yeah, I'd like to be out there, but I don't want to be the creepy old guy out there with the kids playing basketball. But when you're a kid, you idolize these guys so much. They're older, they're bigger, they're stronger, they're amazing.
Absolutely.
That is just something that, I mean, nobody.
No.
Nobody experienced that. I mean, what?
I don't know anybody that ever has.
Name when a high school kid started for a college team
it's never happened.
A basketball
that I know
game.
Of. It's never happened.
So
it's big. And,
maybe,
and,
I don't know, maybe it's the first time ever. I certainly would need someone to tell me the other time. But
I thought it was neat. You know, Terry Rozier after the game, he's like, you know, that's the best turnover I'll ever make in my life.
And, yeah.
You know, even though
they even
Patrick,
said Chris Jones is wiping tears from his eyes after that with a standing ovation.
Oh man! Well,
so the players were in there with him,
that just means a lot. And you know, even though Patrick knows it's a little contrived and whatever, but it's still he's there.
He met friends.
The media interviewed him like he was a player. He signed autographs like he was a player. He did radio interviews like he was a player.
Amazing.
You know. David Levitch hasn't done half of the stuff outside than you know Patrick McSweeney did, and you know David practices a great deal and he's a part of the team. And Patrick McSweeney.
Yeah, I heard today at school he said being famous was a lot cooler, and I quit high school effective immediately.
No, I'm kidding.
I am sure that was just an amazing
experience. Stay in school, Patrick. Man, you're gonna need it.
But moving on to the game, that first half. where the Cards blew up and were up by approximately 30-something or whatever, was so impressive. The fact that Cincinnati was tied at halftime with Mick Cronin's team with Bellarmine, and Bellarmine knows what they're doing. They've got some big guys.
Yeah.
Louisville, you know, still trying to find probably that bench rotation that they're going to use. Shaquan Aaron, of course, still not, you know, final word on that. They've sent the paperwork to the NCAA a few days ago. So Louisville's done doing whatever they have to do. Now they just have to wait. I think that that first half still surprised everyone, the growth from the Barry game to now.
Yeah. Well, you know, you have a point of emphasis of, you know, really locking things down, you know, rebounding. I thought it was interesting that Anas Mahmud started. You know, and I didn't get to watch the game, so I'm going to have to lean on you to kind of tell me. But
well, there's
just looking at things, you know, Anas started and Patino was upset at him for putting the ball on the ground. And
He had the ball stripped away three times. It's like classic rookie mistake. It's like you're 7'2".
Yeah.
Just go ahead and hold it up. No one's getting it. You're the big kid at the playground. Nobody's getting the ball from you.
But this Louisville team is good. And, you know, I know some folks made a big deal about the Barry game and the exhibition, but, like, I'm never going to get too excited about exhibition basketball positively or negatively because I just don't think – and even Patino's talked about it. We're not running our sets because all of our games are on television of some kind, and he doesn't want to show it until he's got to go play his son, Richard Pitino,
right
on Friday.
And that's going to get serious. But in the game, there was some interesting things. He did run a pretty big lineup where it was like – Mango, Anas, and Montrez, I think. There was one time where he went Twin Towers. He did the Flying Dutchman.
Did he really?
Matt Stockman with Anas.
And then did he have Trez in at the three?
He did use Trez at the three in this game. Yeah. And okay. Trez hit a three, which is probably the worst thing in the world to happen. Because as much as we love Trez shooting a three, we need a big body inside. Right. You know, he said, I want to show my new jump shot off, and I want to try to beat my dunk record. It's like, well, by the way, if you show off the new jump shot, you have no chance at breaking your dunk record.
Exactly, because
you need your dunks to be like 80% of your shots.
You're not getting twice the balls.
Yeah.
You know, that's part of it. But like,
so his dunks, I'm calling it right now, folks. He wants to show off the jumper. His dunk, we'll be lucky if he gets, I think, 70 dunks this year.
You think so?
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing.
Just because I think he's going to be shooting more jump shots.
If he hits the jump shot, that's fine. What I don't want to happen is if he's going to hit the jumper and he gives up the dunk record or whatever, no big deal. But this is what I don't want to happen. Remember the movie Major League 2, Charlie Sheen?
Yep.
And he's like, I got the Exterminator and the Distinguisher and all this other crap. He got away from who he really was.
Yeah.
And he was the Wild Thing.
Yeah.
Well, Trez is the nastiest dunker in college basketball.
Right.
If he gives that part of his game up to become something that he's not, then how effective is he really?
Yeah.
I want the Montrezl Harrell, that's the Ricky Vaughn.
That scares the living hell out of teams.
I want Ricky Vaughn, Montrezl Harrell.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But if his jumper's working, awesome. You know, that's just an area of his game that's going to help him later in the NBA draft. But if it's not working, if it's not falling, I don't want him to go through the entire season thinking that he has to make this work.
Right.
And I want him to get back to being, you know, the Monster Mash player that he is.
Yeah.
Because he, as a dunker and as an authoritative power forward, he's the best in the country by far. And if he goes and starts doing all these jump shots, he won't be a first-team All-American at the end of the year if it's not working, it's not falling. So
right.
It's important for him to realize that.
Yeah. Well, there's an intimidation factor. You know, like, so what Montrez brings to the table while he's dunking and while he's outworking you and while he's screaming and while he's hitting his chest – and while he's diving in the stands, is he lowers the competition from the opponent. Because a lot of people, and just when they're younger, when they're not professionals, and they are not professionals in college, unless you're at Kentucky, then you got a few more than the average Joe. But for the most part, that lowers people's effort.
Yeah.
It intimidates them. It brings them down a little bit. So I want that. You know, we need that. You know, that's...
Yep, I want that big, scary dude.
Pretty much scared Randall off.
Yeah.
He was dominating that Kentucky-Louisville game, and the phantom foul is the only thing that could stop him.
Yep. And, you know, we'll never know what happened in that game. How Julius Randle only had three fouls for the tournament, I'll never know. but you know, that's water under a bridge, and, you know, we're on to a new season. But, you know, this team can be really, really good. If Montrezl Harrell has to play the three, it'll be interesting. If Shaquan Aaron can get eligible, and I think he will, I hope. It was just a paperwork issue or something.
Yeah.
Then you got to figure that he can kind of mix in. Anton Gill can mix in at the three. Maybe Montrez doesn't have to as much. But without Shaquan, you know, it may be a requirement for Trez to have to play the three some.
And, you know, that lineup, you know, seeing Trez at three scared me.
Yeah, because it's big. I mean, it's a huge lineup.
Yeah, you know, I mean, enormous. I like the. No, I mean, to me, I mean, I do think it's kind of cool, but to me, it scares me for Shaquan because it's like, is Rick seriously entertaining moving Montrez to the three? Oh no!
Yeah, because
this Shaquan Aaron thing may not be as good of a chance to get him eligible as we thought.
Well, think of your recent threes: Wayne Blackshear, Luke Hancock, Kyle Keurig.
Yeah,
who was before Keurig? T. Will, and then Montrez Harrell's going to be like in the line of your threes. Yeah. It's totally out of the range.
Scary power forward
of and who was before T. Will? Francisco,
probably.
Yeah, so you know that
Larry O'Bannon, you know,
Larry
O was
in there. So yeah, you know. Totally crazy contrast to what we usually see out of the Rick Pitino three spots. So.
Well, I was impressed with the way they played. It is an exhibition, but Scotty Davenport and Bellarmine, they're always a perennial challenger to the title for their division. And so it was you have to respect the effort that they showed. I don't think that Quentin Snyder really is showing that he's ready to really step in and kind of be that heavy contributor, but I do think that time will come, and we just have so many freshmen and a bench that we're going to rely on quite a few freshmen. So it's just one of those things. It's just going to get better, and we're just going to have to enjoy it as it goes, and we'll take a few lumps. We play a good team, and someone will get in foul trouble that's a senior, and we'll put a freshman in, and they'll just do okay, and we'll lose by a little.
Or maybe they do amazing.
But that's the thing with freshmen is every once in a while they'll have that amazing game. They're just – the consistency is never there with a freshman.
Yeah.
So there'll be probably the surprise game where you're like – wow, never saw that coming. You know, that was such a fun game to watch. So I do think, there will be days like that.
I think Quentin Snyder's really going to round into form probably like mid-January. I think we'll start seeing more of him. And I think when that happens and Pitino's able to layer him into the rotation as he feels better and better about his defense, then I think that's really when this team kind of moves from a pretty good, you know, 3-2 seed team in the NCAA tournament. And if this happens, pushing into a 1 seed category. I don't know if the damage will be done for that to happen for this NCAA tournament, but they may be playing to that caliber by the time the NCAA tournament comes around. Because really, Pitino's talked a lot about fouling and playing defense without fouling this year, and that's because he doesn't want to get Rozier or Chris Jones into foul trouble. So will he be as aggressive? And if Quentin Snyder can provide him with any amount of time to where Louisville could be aggressive defensively, well, then that's going to take this team from a pretty good team, maybe a contender that can make a run, to a team where you have to really seriously consider, are they a Final Four contender?
Right.
You know, and because that pressure that Louisville can put on the ball, that Rick Pitino pressure, is a staple. Without it, I think this team is going to be pretty good. If they can really ramp it up and press, this team could really go next level. So yeah. I'll be looking for that.
Well, we will get a firsthand look in Puerto Rico on Friday as Louisville, Minnesota, Rick Sr. versus Rick Jr. in the Armed Forces Classic, playing at a coastal base, right?
Coast Guard base.
Not on a ship. So they took it off the carrier, the Carrier Classic.
Cool idea, but it can get rained out.
Rained out.
Condensation
when
they
lose the ball to the ocean.
Yeah,
something like that.
Now we have to call the whole thing off because of the ball.
We don't have a ball. So that is going to be Friday night, 7 o'clock or 7:30.
7:30, I believe, and it's on ESPN. And time to get some hoops in your life. And it's kind of cool to
best time of year
to get some hoops going on a Friday night
on a bye week.
Exactly.
We totally scored on
you
that.
You can really kind of really ease in, enjoy it. You don't have to worry about going to a football game the very next day. And
remember how miserable the bye week was before Florida State?
Yep.
You know, everyone's like, oh my God, I have nothing to watch.
It would have been
no
nice
Cardinal
to have
stuff in my life.
Of course, you did have a red-white scrimmage, but
that doesn't count.
Red-white scrimmage, yeah. Not the same.
All the freshmen score like 30 points in those things, and they play their first exhibition against a team that actually plays defense, and they all score 2 points.
It's like nothing. Everybody always is awesome in the red-white scrimmage.
Yeah.
Honest has really done well, as you know, Pacino started him against Bellarmine, but you know, he's coming along. Like we said, he's going to look great. He's going to look good. And there we go.
All right, folks. Well, thank you for checking us out this week on the Crunch Zone Podcast. Don't forget, you can check us out on Louisville.am. Our partner, thecrunchzone.com, the best site in the world.
The whole world.
Stitcher Radio and also iTunes Radio. Set us up for immediate download. You don't even have to go look for us. So Louisville's got a huge game in basketball next against Rick Jr. in Minnesota Friday night. And then we've got, after the bye week, a huge game against first ever meeting between Louisville and Notre Dame. There's a lot to be excited about, and hopefully next week we'll be talking about some basketball victories and prepping you for Notre Dame football. It's the Crunch Zone. Mark, you got anything for the fans?
Go Cards.